is calling for compassion. And almost everything is suffering, calling for compassion. But even if it's not suffering, it's still calling for compassion. When I'm feeling well, I'm calling for compassion. When I'm feeling sick, I'm calling for compassion. And I'm proposing to you that you are calling for compassion all day long. And great compassion is there listening to you, respecting you, and respecting any suffering. And it's taking care of you. It's not trying to get rid of the... Great compassion is not trying to get rid of the suffering people. Of course, it wishes that they will be free with suffering, because great compassion is free with suffering. Great compassion wants all beings to participate in freedom with suffering. And freedom with suffering goes with compassion with suffering. Goes with honoring suffering. Okay, somebody's going to throw you a cough drop. Ready? Here they come. Now, these people are not trying to get rid of you. And I was just going to reach for the lid of this cup of water. But as I was reaching, I thought, the way you reached was not very respectful. A little bit too fast. Watch. This time I'm going to do it more respectfully. This is a bit much, I know. And here comes the hand. And it goes down to the cup and takes it on the top and lifts it up and sees some Chinese characters, which I can read. Yeah. It says, myriad blessings without limit. Yeah, you know that when you're careful with things, you know that you discover things. Now I'm going to put it down. Here you go. Down you go. With training, we can remember that we're trying to honor things, and we even can notice when we don't. And we say, oh, I missed honoring you. And then we can say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I wanted to honor you, but then I got distracted, because my mind gets distracted sometimes. So then when I forget respecting you, I might still notice it and say, I'm sorry. There's so much more to talk about. One thing is that people often come to me and they say they're trying to practice compassion. They're very happy to try. And they sometimes feel like they are practicing compassion with all these flames. And they want to also not miss the present moments of their life. They want to be here for moment after moment life, because that's the way it really comes. They want to be with the way life really comes and goes. And being compassionate with the way life comes and goes, we wake up to the way life does not come or go. Part of our life comes and goes. Part of our life does not come and go. Every moment we got a coming and a going, And every moment we got a not coming and going. Our life is always not coming and going. And it's also always coming and going. So our compassion comes and goes, and also compassion does not come and go. Working with the compassion that comes and goes we often think, oh, my passion, I want to practice compassion, but I'm wondering with this compassion that comes and goes, I'm wondering if I'm really compassionate. I wonder if my compassion is really wholehearted. I wonder if my compassion is really honoring all beings. So many of us are having trouble honoring all beings. Like right now, maybe you feel like, I can honor everybody in this room. And then somebody says, but what about so-and-so? No, I can't honor so-and-so. And also, so-and-so, I think, is having trouble honoring me. But I'm not, I don't know. If I really honor so-and-so, I think I might open to the possibility that even though so-and-so doesn't look like he's honoring me, he might be. Questioning myself about whether I'm really practicing compassion, even when I'm trying, and questioning whether that's really a wholehearted respect of somebody, a wholehearted honoring, that questioning is also part of practicing great compassion. Great compassion doesn't just go, okay, this is great compassion. No questions. I have no questions about it, and nobody else is going to question me. Great compassion is like, okay, great compassion. But what is it? And certainly a person of great compassion is a great authority. The authorities in the Buddha history are the great compassionate ones. They're the authorities. They're the authors of the tradition. But they questioned, and they were questioned. The Buddha gets questioned, and the Buddha questions. So if you want to practice compassion, then it's quite natural that you would wonder if you are. Like you might say, I think I wanted to practice compassion and I thought I was just kind of compassionate there for a second. I want to honor all beings. I want to honor all forms of suffering. I want to respect all beings. I want to respect all forms of suffering. But I wonder if I really do respect. Sometimes you feel like, well, actually, I don't wonder. I don't wonder if I respect beings. I don't respect that person. So I don't wonder if I do. I know I don't. Well, then again, question that. Do you really not respect the people you think you don't respect? So sometimes you think you respect people and they say to you, I don't think you respect me. And then maybe you say, oh, yes, I do. But that's not respecting them accusing you of disrespect. If you accuse me of disrespecting you, I want to honor that accusation. Then I'm not being respectful of you. If you feel I invite you. If you feel like I'm not being respectful of you, if I passed you and you feel like that wasn't very respectful the way he passed me, I welcome you to question me about that. Do you feel like you were respectful when you just walked by me? And I might say, I think, I'm sorry, I missed the chance. I just wanted to get by you and get to the toilet. Just like I just wanted to get the lid off that cup. I didn't really want to respect the lid and lift it off. I just wanted to get the water. So, yeah, but when I think I'm not disrespecting you, I could even say, you could say to me, do you respect me? And I would say, no. And then you could say, really? Are you sure? And then I might go, oh, yeah, right, I do respect you. We always respect everybody. And also, sometimes, not always, sometimes we disrespect. We always respect, we always honor. If we didn't, the thing wouldn't be there. But we also miss it because we're not well trained. We miss that, and then we forget to take that missing and bring it together with the not missing. One time I was with a group of people, and I was in a position of authority, and they were questioning me. That kind of a gang of questioners. And it was like, you know, pretty fierce, this questioning. And I didn't feel like, oh, they're honoring me with all these questions. all this intensity is honoring me. And there was a facilitator for this session, and afterwards he said, it's just amazing how much those people love you. We always love each other, always. We're always compassionate to each other, always. We're always wise. But our little mind cannot get a hold of that. We're temporarily kind to each other and temporarily disrespectful and not honoring. Again, by working with the temporary deviation from the always, we integrate temporary with always. We're always fully possessing the wisdom and virtue of Buddhas, but we temporarily are caught up in our ideas and miss it. But by being kind to our missing, we open to what's always there. And questioning ourselves and being questioned by others is a necessary element in practicing great compassion. And sometimes I question myself in the form, the question is, are people questioning you enough? It's been quite a while since somebody questioned you. But then if I go too long without people questioning me, I think, And then if I go too short without questioning, I go, get me out of here. I'm going to get through this. Even though it's actually, really, it's love. But I can't see it because I'm not loving it enough. Yeah, also, people often say to me, people don't respect me here. And you should say, well, if you respect other people more, you'll start to see that they respect you. Like some parents think their kids don't respect them. And their kids say, I don't respect you. But they're talking to the person they respect most when they say, when they act disrespectful, when they say they're not, they don't respect you. They're talking to the person who's almost like the whole universe to them. But they're, you know, they're struggling with how to respect that. Because it's so awesome, it's so huge, it's tremendous. And we tremble in the face of that which we most cherish and most appreciate. And we, in our trembling, we can veer into acting disrespectfully. But still, right in the disrespect is this tremendous appreciation. But we have to be kind to the disrespect in order to open the eyes to the truth of great compassion, which is all one of the great things about great compassion is it's all pervading. There's no place it doesn't reach. It reaches the most cruel people. And they may not know that it does, and therefore they act in this cruel way. But it's still there. And the great compassion wants them to wake up to it and become free of cruelty. But again, it's not compassionate to try to kill cruelty. Great compassion frees cruelty, disarms it, makes it not harmful. Questioning authority is part of great compassion. Great compassion walks up to all of us and questions us. Sometimes in the past, people would question me in classes and lectures, and other people afterwards would tell them that they were being disrespectful to question me. And I would often say, no, I need you to question me. And I don't usually say, and you need these other people to question you when you question me. But I hope they don't question you in such a way that you stop questioning me. I need you to question me. Did you hear me say, I need you to question me? Go ahead. Yes, you have a question of me?
So I've always loved satire and sarcasm.
Satires and sarcasm.
And I've always loved literature, and I've always loved satirical literature, and black comedy and dark humor. And it seems to me one of the advantages of that is it allows you to enter into these dark situations. And
the advantage of this type of literature or art,
yeah,
helps you enter the dark situations.
Yeah. And it allows you to, at least it allows you to not try to get by the dark situation.
It supports you. It allows you and supports you to not try to get by the dark situation.
So, but there's always something sort of, it seems to cater to the, sometimes it seems to cater to the not so nice side of me, you know, the side that I feel like I shouldn't be cultivating.
Let's just go. You said that there's a problem that this dark art seems to cater to the not so nice part of you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the dark art sounds like great compassion. Great compassion would be a caterer for the not nice parts of you. It would come and be your servant. It would come and honor you. The dark side of you needs to be honored in order to wake up to what's honoring it. Small compassion sometimes has trouble honoring some of your darkness, but great compassion, you know, it honors the medium dark and the really dark. And it wakes you up to what great compassion is by honoring you. It doesn't usually wake you up. We don't usually wake up to our dark side when people come and disrespect us. We just get darker in revenge. Catering to it for the sake of waking it up. Like, you know, I have a lot of examples like that. Like, from my ordination teacher, Suzuki Roshi. On the day of my ordination, he said to me, "I'm sure you won't be arrogant about getting ordained so young." And I go, He catered to me. "I'm sure you won't be arrogant." So arrogance is kind of, for some people, they feel that their arrogance is not some nice part of themselves. It's great compassion comes and caters to the arrogance and says, "You know what? Can I say something to you?" And you say,
"Yes."
He says, "Yes." "You are one of the most unarrogant, one of the most humble people I know." And then you go, that was interesting the way he did that. Yeah. So yeah, the Buddhas are serving us. They're catering to all of our darkness. They're bringing our, and by catering to our darkness, they bring our attention to our darkness. Mm-hmm. And they teach us to cater to it, not necessarily indulge in it, but get to know it. But getting to know it requires respect. And I can't get to know this cup without honoring it. I can knock it down and break it without honoring it. But to get it to know it the way it is now, I have to give it my life. My life is like I'm an attentive living creature, and I can give attention, and I can cater to cups, and I can cater to arrogant people, and I can cater to etc. So we bring catering to it, and like when you were talking there about the darkness, I flashed in my mind that the Buddhist tradition, especially the Zen Buddhist tradition, kind of like one of its main functions in Asia and somewhat now in the West, is to perform funeral ceremonies. And oftentimes people think of death as dark. Like, go into the darkness, go into the grave, go into the crypt. Now there's this whole thing with that, but then later you go into the light. But anyway, at the funeral ceremony, we cater to death. We help people pay attention to death. And by paying attention to death at a funeral, it's like the earth opens up. And life comes shooting out. Like right in the middle of a funeral, you might feel tremendously alive. And people often say after a funeral to me, they say, "I'm so glad to meet you. I'm sorry it's under these circumstances." But they're glad to meet me because in that ceremony, they found some life in the death. And they're happy, and I helped them by doing the ceremony. And they say, "But sorry has to be under these circumstances." But I think, I don't say it, I say, "But this is the only, you wouldn't meet me without these circumstances. And even if you met me, you probably wouldn't want me to come over and start bringing your attention to death. But you come to funeral ceremony, you let me cater to death. You let me encourage you to look at the dark. And then you look at the dark, you discover the light. There's light in the darkness. So the darkness isn't really dark. There's freedom in bondage. There's no place for freedom separate from bondage. It's right in there. But you have to be compassionate to being stuck in this space in order to wake up to you're not stuck in this space. We're already not stuck. But if we're not kind to being stuck, we don't get it. We just feel stuck. But that stuck is calling for compassion. And then there's freedom from being stuck, because stuck is already free of being stuck, because being stuck is already stuck temporarily and always not stuck. Thanks for the question. Yes.
So how do people who are practicing your teaching also work on trying to reduce suffering?
If I was trying to reduce suffering, you can see, let's start with I'm trying to reduce suffering. Somebody's hungry and they're suffering and I want to give them some food, not so much so they won't suffer, but just because they're asking me to give them food and I want them to have food so they are nourished. I could think of it as reducing suffering. So maybe I think I'll reduce their hunger anyway, so I give them food. Now, they may not accept my offering, but anyway, I'm kind of trying to feed them. At the same time, I can feed people and honor them or not. So they're hungry, they're scared, and I want to help them address their fear. Not so much, but let's say I do want to address their fear in order to reduce their fear. Let's say I do. If I'm really respectful of that effort and really respectful of the fear, then I'm doing the practice I'm talking about. But I still might be in the process of reducing the fear. The practice of reducing the fear, also I would encourage myself to respect the practice. The people who are trying to reduce fear, they also should be respected. And they should, if they want to wake up to reality, it's good for them to respect the suffering or the fear they're trying to reduce. So they will be more effective, not so much in this. Sometimes you cannot reduce people's suffering. Somebody's sick, right? And you want to reduce their suffering. And you try, but that doesn't get reduced. However, if you respect the suffering, if you honor the suffering, while you're still, part of you is honoring it and part of you is working to reduce it. Okay? Those are two together. I honor the suffering and I would like to reduce it. You may start to realize that trying to reduce it doesn't necessarily go with honoring it. And in the process of trying to reduce it, you might accidentally trip upon freedom from it. And this suffering may get reduced. It may actually go away, because many sufferings are impermanent. But before the suffering goes away, how about waking up to great joy and great compassion? by practicing respect towards the effort to reduce suffering and practicing, respect the effort to reduce suffering and respect the suffering. That frees us from both the suffering and the attempt to reduce it. But that doesn't mean you don't continue to attempt to reduce it, and it doesn't mean that suffering doesn't continue. But both of those, attempting to reduce suffering is an impermanent phenomena. Mm-hmm. Suffering is impermanent, but honoring them, there's an honoring of them which never stops and never starts. That's the Buddha. And then honoring them, honoring suffering and the impulse to reduce it. Of course, you've heard about some people are interested in increasing suffering too, right? So there's the impulse to reduce, there's the impulse to increase, and then there's the suffering. I say respect, honor the impulse to increase, which is horrible, the impulse to reduce, which is totally understandable and not so horrible, and the suffering itself. And in that case, I'm saying that those things, all those things, will go eventually anyway, but they may not go for a long time, and before they go, we can wake up to freedom and peace. Peace with the suffering. Harmony with the suffering. Harmony with people who are trying to increase suffering. Those cruel people. Harmony with those kind people who are trying to reduce it. But we need to totally let the suffering be in order to wake up and be free of it. Peace requires that we let things be. But you can also let the attempt to modify things be too. Is that making sense? Is that working for you? Pretty difficult is calling for compassion. If you can be in the realm, you can be in the situation of pretty difficult. And if it's honored wholeheartedly, without getting rid of pretty difficult, you're free. It's pretty difficult and I'm free. It's easy and I'm free. It's impossible and I'm free. But the freedom comes by fully embracing those flames. That's what I'm saying. And people often do say, compassion is hard. But that's another thing to be compassionate with. That it's almost like an argument. Like, yeah, it sounds good, but it's hard. Well, that statement is just another opportunity for it. And sometimes people say, I cannot be compassionate to so-and-so. I just can't. After I maybe suggest that might be a good idea. And I say, but can you be compassionate towards your inability to be compassionate towards so-and-so? And they say, yeah. Well, start there then. If you can be... I'm suggesting this kind of far-out thing. If you can be compassionate towards all your lack of compassion, if you can be compassionate towards all your lack of compassion towards many people, you will be able to eventually be compassionate to them. Yes?
Self-serving, and in a way that's like I want to get rid of it, so that I don't have to honor that it's real, so that I don't have to face that it's real, so that I don't have to face that I'm part of something that includes that suffering. And the word reduce just really struck me in that way, so I wanted to share that, and thank you for the talk.
Yes.
Earlier on, you talked about the importance of being in the present and not going ahead to the future and so forth. I look at meditation practice as kind of the basic training of being in the present.
Yeah.
And so.
I hope so.
So my question to you is, how do you meditate?
How do I meditate? Well, I don't know. I don't know how I meditate. Do you want me to tell some stories about it? That's not how I meditate, that's just stories about it. I do notice, and I'm not actually writing down all the examples, but anyway, I do notice sometimes that I'm trying to get by. In other words, I'm not just being here. Did you hear that? Could you hear that?
Yes.
I do notice sometimes that I think about, when is this going to be over? Or when are they going to come and pick me up? When am I going to get to the head of the line? I do sometimes notice that. And that's hard to like be thinking about when is this going to be over? It's hard, and then it makes it harder to think about when is it going to be over. It's hard, and then it's hard to just be here. And then sometimes not only is it hard to be here, but I'm kind of not being here. I'm kind of like leaning into the future. When's this going to be over, this pain? And usually I'm kind to that lack of patience. Thinking about when the pain's going to be over is a lack of patience. So sometimes I'm in pain and I'm right there. So that's the way I am sometimes. That's called patience. And sometimes I'm like having trouble being completely here and relaxed with the pain. And I notice it. And I'm kind to that. And then I'm here again. So there is a what do you call it? There's this interpenetration, there's this dance between just being here and not, and just being the same as this, and just this is it, and thinking about something else. Or losing track of that, and then being kind to that, and bringing that back. That could be called meditation, I suppose. It also could be called the way I live. Is that I feel that you're all asking me, you all want me to be here. You do not want me to be someplace else. When I'm here, you want me to be here. When I'm someplace else, you. I don't know how you feel about that, but, but I think you want me to be here. I feel called to be here, and I honor that call, and I feel it's my responsibility to respond to that call by trying to be here. And if I'm not here, I feel called to take care of not being here. I think you, if I'm not here, I think you want me to pay attention to that too. Am I right? Yes. Which means you want me to be compassionate to where I am, and if I'm trying to distract myself, you want me to be compassionate to distraction, right? Don't you want me to be compassionate to the distraction? Now maybe some of you said, no, you should punish yourself for that. Whenever you're distracted, you should punish yourself. And actually, in my early meditation practice, I used to punish myself when I got distracted, or threatened to punish myself. And I got myself under control. But when I got under control, I realized this is not the way I want to live. I do not want to be under control. I didn't come to Zen to be under control. I came to Zen to be free. But free also doesn't mean getting away from people who are trying to control me, which is most people. You didn't laugh at that one.
Wasn't that control?
Pardon?
Telling us to laugh?
Pardon?
What? You were controlling us by telling us to laugh.
Did I tell you you should laugh? Did I tell you to laugh? I said you didn't laugh.
Oh, you didn't laugh.
I said you didn't laugh at that excellent joke. Oh, you just laughed there, didn't you? Did I control you into that? I don't think so. I did?
A little bit.
Anyway, I don't think you're under my control. And if you, and part of you not being under my control is you think you are. A little bit. Some of you think you're totally under my control. And some of you think I have no control over you. I am totally responsible for you, but I'm not in control of you. I used to have a dog. I was responsible for the dog, but I wasn't in control of the dog. People say, control your dog. I say, oh, yeah, sure. I'm responsible for the dog, and if you tell me, I'm going to listen to you if you tell me, curb your dog, control your dog, control your children, control your, people even say, control your students. So I got one student under control. That's great. Somewhat. So if people tell me to control my students, well, I said, there was a student once that I got somewhat under control. But he lives in Minneapolis. So you should go there and see him. He's great. He's like, I was somewhat successful. But the students in California, because of them, people say, control your students. But then sometimes people come up to me and say, oh, you have such great students. Thank you so much. Many of those people are their teachers. Thank you for being my teacher's teacher. My teacher is such a great teacher. Thank you for controlling them into being. No, thank you for letting them be so they could bloom. Thank you for giving up trying to control them so they could become a great teacher. If if somebody's arrogant, somebody's dark, cater to them, and their darkness will bloom into beautiful compassion. The earth, the water, the carbon dioxide, the sun, cater to lotus plants. And lotus plants grow in the dark. About you. Yes? Yes? You have a question?
No, I'm the Eno and it's 10:45.
Is that a question? You aren't trying to control me, are you? You are? Well, if you're trying to control me, what should I do if she's trying to control me?
I honor
you for trying to control me. Right?
That's wonderful.
Do you feel honored?
I do.
Well, great.
And I feel regretful for feeling like I have to control you.
Do you think you did?
No,
she didn't. Did she control me? No, she just told me she was trying to. And I honor her trying to. Are any of you trying to control me? None of you? Wow. So she's totally into controlling me. He's a little bit into control. The rest of you are not trying to control me. I'm not under control. And yet, you're going to be free of me soon.